Sometime, watch a toddler eat, and boy, will you appreciate the spoon. Who came up with this brilliant idea? I mean, it can do everything. You can even cut with its side. Well, welcome to the realm of things we rarely think about. This is where food history takes center stage. The everyday, the ordinary, the taken for granted usually have anything but ordinary stories behind them. British food historian Bea Wilson loves this sort of research. Among other awards, she was named Food Writer of the Year by the BBC. Well, Bea's latest book is Consider the Fork, A History of How We Cook and Eat. Bea, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, you cover all of the things that are in the kitchen and on the table in this book. You've got egg beaters, you've got pots and pans, you've got kitchen design. But one of the things that intrigued me was the spoon. You say the spoon is the mirror of a culture. That's a pretty big statement.
It is a pretty big statement. But I think the thing about spoons is that they belong to every human culture in the world. There are fork cultures, there are chopstick cultures, but everyone uses spoons, and they go way, way back to the first ancient ancestors using shells lashed onto sticks. And therefore, I think they're a very good mirror to the surrounding culture to look at the particular form that the spoon takes and what that tells us about the kind of foods that a particular culture likes to eat.
So for instance,
if you look at Victorian times, the 19th century, whether in Britain or in the States, there's this mad profusion of spoons, everything from citrus spoons to gravy ladles to tomato spoons, sauce spoons. And there are many different reasons for this. You could say it's a product of the Industrial Revolution and spoons can be mass produced as never before. You could also say it's part of the development from service à la française, where all the dishes were laid on the table at one time, to service à la russe, where there was, you know, the succession of courses that we would still expect to this day in fancy restaurants.
I think that that's such an interesting thing that a lot of us don't realize, that in the 19th century, people started serving a meal in a completely different way.
They did. They started eating courses for the first time. This notion of there being starters and main courses and desserts didn't exist before. Everything would have been laid out all together, and you needed far fewer individual items of flatware or cutlery. So that's one thing. But I think the big thing that happened in the 19th century was a new civilization of table manners, a new anxiety at the table about touching food, handling food. And these specialized spoons go along with that because it's a way of never feeling that you have to get too close to food with all of its stickiness and noise. It's a way of being extremely polite. And there were even special solid silver potato chip servers marketed by Tiffany's, which I think is a very rarefied item. I'm not sure many households have those today.
So you're saying people were anxious, they wanted to distance themselves? What had happened that brought that about?
I think it's part of a whole kind of culture of manners. And if you look at the sort of rules that come out about handling food in 19th century etiquette books, there'll be things like soup must always be drunk from the edge of the soup spoon. So you're not sort of getting too close to the soup, except for men with moustaches. They were allowed to drink the soup from the end of the spoon. Or things like elaborate rules about things being eaten with forks, how to eat a peach with a fork, how to eat corn on the cob with a fork, which no sense at all. But it seems to go along with a kind of general sense that you don't want to pick things up and eat them with your fingers. You don't want to get sticky. You want to remain dignified and graceful. And the flatware goes along with that. But as the food writer Dara Goldstein has said, it also creates a kind of nervousness. She's described this condition of fork anxiety. The sense being that once you've got these tools like tomato spoons available, you really feel that you ought to be using them and just an ordinary spoon won't do anymore.
You talk about a period too of the political spoon.
Yes. In 1660 in Britain, Charles II came back to the throne during the period known as the Restoration. And there had been a brief 11-year period known as the Commonwealth when we'd had no king at all, having executed our king in 1649. And it was crucial for Charles II to really impose his will and make everyone forget the fact that we'd done without a king. And one of the ways he did that was through spoons. He'd been at the court in France, where they had a particular type of spoon called the trefid. No one in Britain had ever eaten with one of these spoons before 1660. And almost overnight, this became the dominant shape. If people had one of the older spoons, the Puritans, they disliked ornamentation in any form. And Puritan spoons were very plain, solid pieces of silver with an egg-shaped bowl and a very plain, flat handle. And if you had a Puritan spoon after the Restoration, you would be pretty sure to take it to a silversmith and get it melted down and remade as a trefid. And the trefid is really the spoon which lends its shape to all subsequent modern spoons, in that the bowl for the first time becomes the deep oval that we all recognise as a spoon shape. But the distinctive thing about it was that the handle finished in this three cleft shape, hence the name. We sometimes imagine that all changes in cutlery would be something very gradual, they'd happen over many generations. This happened straight away. In 1660, no one had eaten with one of these spoons before. By 1680, the trefid had spread through the whole of Britain, and it would be very rare to come across a Puritan spoon at all.
Completely different way of looking at this thing we use every day. Thanks so much, Bea.
Thank you.
British food historian Bea Wilson's book is Consider the Fork, A History of How We Cook and Eat.